Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And it's my great pleasure in the second hour of today's show to bring you an exclusive interview with Jerry Georgiatos, independent journalist and former candidate for WikiLeaks Senate seat in Western Australia. We're going to be talking about some very important Australian issues over the next hour. Jerry has actually done a lot of work investigating the Schapelle Corby case, which is a subject that we've covered a lot on this show. And it's a very complicated topic which kind of intersects with a variety of issues to do with government corruption and media bias and even propaganda, one might say, and also our relationship with our nearest neighbour, Indonesia. So it's actually a very important topic, and a lot of people often say, you know, it's not a big deal, it's just one person, she's in prison, there's a lot of people in prison, and you often get this from the general public, from people who don't understand the case very well, and people have a negative attitude towards it, often because they've taken sound bites from the media, they've never really found out what the substantive issues are, and then they wonder, well, why is everyone paying so much attention to Schapelle Corby? But anyway, we're going to get into a lot of this topic in depth in this interview. We're also going to be looking at some of the other topics that that Jerry has been involved in, including WikiLeaks and including some important Indigenous issues in Australia. So without further ado, let me welcome Jerry Georgiatos to Truth News Radio. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am, and hi, Heron, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure, and you know, your work is very important. You know, having looked at what you've done and some of the research and articles you've written, having real independent journalists is an incredibly important thing. And I don't know what your take on it is, Jerry, but it seems that that there's a dire shortage of really independent investigative journalists all over the world, but in Australia particularly.
Well, the problem is actually all over the world. It's a global phenomenon. I'd argue that there are very few investigative journalists in Australia, and there are some good journalists, but they're very few indeed. We are a very litigant-aversive society. I've been taken into the Supreme Court for my journalism. I've actually stood solid and refused to retract my journalism, watertight stories, but not too many small publishers or even major publishers would do such a thing. So, the journalists out there, most of them are kidding themselves. It's not journalism. They're armchair critics and speculation. That's not investigative journalism.
Absolutely. And there seems to be this tendency to always sing with the chorus on certain topics. And one of those is clearly the Schapelle Corby topic, where we've seen so many journalists go down the path of smearing Schapelle Corby or members of her family, often based on very flimsy sources. And I'm thinking of one particular journalist by the name of Eamon Duff, who is a writer for the Fairfax Press, who's done a whole series of really what you'd call smear pieces on the Corby family, which then he turned into a book and which has now been turned into a television series, which is on Channel 9. A quick take on all that.
Well, I won't talk about Eamon Duff target specific. I'll talk about all of them.
Sure.
I think there's been a lot of lazy journalism. I can't even associate the word journalism with what we're actually talking about because it hasn't been journalism. Tenuous associations have been tapped into, assumptions, presumptions, false suppositions. It's been all speculation. And from that speculation, a lot of myth-making. They've perceptually modified what the Australian national consciousness is thinking about Schapelle Corby and her family. It's been mobbing, it's been diminution, they've all got blood on their hands. I've actually come to the utter conclusion that they've committed an incredible travesty, and it's not just the Australian government that knows that she's innocent, it's not just the Indonesian government that knows that Schapelle Corby is innocent. Complicit in all this is actually the Australian media because of its lazy journalism, because of its speculation, and because it's decided by disrepute completely, and while family is various restitution, What's happened to Schapelle Corby could happen to anybody. And Schapelle Corby is now she's even got a stronger case beyond reasonable doubt about her innocence than what, you know, for instance, the tragedy around the family of Azaria Chamberlain, which was another travesty and tragedy in itself. But what has happened to Schapelle Corby pales even the Azaria Chamberlain family's tragedy.
Doesn't it indeed? And one of the things I've found when you talk to people about this, who maybe know a little bit about it, is that there's often a naivety people have about the concept of guilt or innocence in law. And what I mean by that is when you have a travesty of justice, when someone has been falsely convicted, generally what we have is a lack of proof. We have sufficient reasonable doubt. And you know, there's been great celebrated cases of this in history, the Birmingham Four, or whatever it was in the yes. UK, Reuben Hurricane Carter in the US. Yes. And what it often comes down to is, well, you can't know with 100% certainty that someone is innocent, but you can certainly say that there's been a travesty of justice, and you can certainly say that there's a massive reasonable doubt. Therefore, the conviction has to be overturned. But often people seem to be caught in a mindset which I think is actually put into them somewhat by propaganda and by media, where they think, they think they know someone is guilty. And I've had people say to me, I think I know Schapelle's guilty. I can tell. But it's actually not anything to do with the system of law. It's something to do with a more primal instinct that takes over when it's become sort of popularized in this way.
Well, that's what pop culture is about. And look, I've boxed popped quite a few journalists just recently, and seasoned journalists, about Schapelle's predicament and what they thought of all the issues around her and whether she's innocent or guilty. And it was actually a shock to the system somewhat. I found it quite disturbing. Most of them tapped into just rogue thinking that hadn't been validated. And came back at me. Yep, she's guilty. That's for sure. Some of what they said was so disturbing that I don't even want to put it to air, because it casts an aspersion upon them.
Indeed.
But that's a sad indictment. And it actually shocked me that seasoned journalists, would come back and actually, ride on the back of a presumption or, on unvalidated, unreferenced, and unsourced material. And what's actually happened to Schapelle Corby in the last, in terms of the national consciousness and public perception of Schapelle, a travesty in itself. It's not just a legal travesty of justice that we have here. It's a moral compass travesty of justice. People, without knowing anything about her, have tapped into this information wave, the tsunami of information that they've never tested, that they've never proofed, and that they have no reliable source, even in the media, that they could tap into to actually argue, well, look here, this investigative journalist or this suite of journalists, have actually worked hard in being able to validate their arguments, even if they are suppositions. But their source material is so problematic. But, if I go back to just what even journalists are saying, let alone just our general citizenry, they're all buying into speculative commentary and social, comment that has no place, and especially when it comes to the rights of a person. What's sad to me is around 204, maybe half of Australia thought that she was innocent. There was a presumption amongst people, a gut feeling that she was innocent, because who smuggles or traffics cannabis to Bali?
If I might just interject, that initial presumption of innocence was based on very common sense observations before all of the various hearsay and smears had been injected into the discussion. Most people recognised that you would not traffic marijuana from Australia to Indonesia. There is absolutely no financial incentive to do that. And I think that was probably the main reason that the common sense observation, well, why would someone have done that? And then, of course, that then should have then followed through with a whole lot more investigation. But that's where it seems to have, it went off the track, didn't it? It went off the rail.
It went off the track. Are you there, Heron?
Yes, I am indeed, yes.
It went off the track because of tenuous associations that were made, tenuous associations that no Australian media actually had any right to make or explore with other family members, for instance. And much of that was actually fallacious. It was untrue. It was false. But yet it now rides around the Australian landscape as if true, or as if there is some truth. I've now done a number of radio interviews and other media, and I'm actually surprised that the hosts of their programs who come back at me as if they know the truth, and yet I'm the one who's now retraced the steps of, for instance, the Expendable Project, the researchers there, and who's actually interviewed many other people. And look, I got involved in all this. So I talked to some of the researchers, and as far back as 2004, I was in the tertiary sector at the time. I had just come back from an overseas holiday. I travel with a backpack or quite light because I know what actually happens. I know about the right corruption in airport services. I know that there are corrupted airport baggage handlers who use passengers as unwitting drug mules, and I certainly didn't want to be one of them.
Yeah.
Actually, just returned a month or so before October 8th, which was when Chappelle was arrested at Denpasar Airport, found in possession of the 4.2 kilograms. Now, I can't help but, I knew straight away that it wasn't possible that it could have been hers, because the reality is, even if you look at the UN drug reports, World Drug Report that's actually out there that was put together in 2007, before, was valued at about $89,000 net profit on Australian streets. It would have brought her, generated her an $800 loss on Balinese streets because it would have cost her about $20,000 to buy the 4.2 kilograms of cannabis. But even if she hadn't bought it for $20,000, she would have been making 100 times less what she could have made on Australian streets in comparison to Balinese streets. And the we've got to actually look at all the facts that the Australian media haven't looked at, have chosen not to look at, and now because they're in disgrace and are not prepared to seek redemption, are denying her her justice, are denying the apology that they should be making to her. That's actually what's quite tragic, and this is why I picked up the call. But look, nearly 2 years ago, I was involved in another injustice in this country, and that was the Indonesian children, the Indonesian minors that were in our Australian adult prison.
Jerry, we're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. I'm talking to Jerry Georgiatos about Chappelle Corby and other really important matters for all Australians. Don't go away. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Jerry Georgiatos, investigative journalist and activist and a passionate advocate of important issues of justice and truth in Australia. Jerry, so we've been talking about Chappelle, but you briefly were going to digress there into the issue of the people smugglers.
Children.
Yeah, please go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually intertwined, so it's not too much of a digression.
Yeah.
It's how I first became more involved, other than, having effectively also sat on the fence myself for a number of years, but, gut instinct knowing that Chappelle Corby was obviously innocent and just wishing her, every justice. And let us, before I move on to that, remember that, why she's actually in this predicament. It would have taken, it needed the Australian government to step in to do its bit, but because of geopolitical reasons, this false sense of diplomacy and this, skewed sense of the national interest in not wanting to admit the extensiveness of corruption in their airports and the movement of cannabis domestically within Australian airports and the movement of illicit substances, drugs, heroin, cocaine, all of it from within Australia to other parts of the world, and including Indonesia and Indochina. They weren't prepared to do that, and it needed that type of, consular representation and even prime ministerial representation. No one smuggles cannabis into Indonesia. It never has happened before. Seeing your customs officers, which we'll refer to a little bit later, including Alan Tessing, have said in their long experience that they've never encountered any attempt by anyone to move significant amounts of cannabis from Australia to Indonesia. Or other countries in the region. It would be like sending coal to Newcastle, is a quote from Alan Tessing, which resonates quite strongly with me.
Absolutely, yeah.
And also importantly, Indonesia has also personally told me themselves, if you're caught in possession, it doesn't matter whether you're guilty or not guilty, they will sentence you. They will sentence you to incarceration. And, even if this be cannabis, even if they know that somebody's actually innocent, what they want is the Australian government to scrub up and admit the extensiveness of its corrupted airport services and then to up the ante in doing more about that. And Australia is not actually prepared to do that. And that actually goes to the crux of the matter. But to quickly respond to what I was saying a little bit before.
Sure.
About the Indonesian children. Look, I visit prisons. And I came across children in an adulthood. I was looking at these young people. I was pretty positive that they couldn't be 18, 19, or 20 years of age. They looked 13, 14, 15. When I affirmed that they were indeed children, I blew the whistle. I informed the superintendent of the prison. What actually happened a little bit later was that the Ministry of Justice, its intelligence unit, banned me from the prisons.
Right.
I got banned after all these years of, supporting prisoners for various reasons, and especially alternative pathway programs. I was often invited to prisons to speak to incarcerated souls about, ways forward in life, whether it be education, employment, or other opportunity and support systems. And what then began was a long campaign, a two-year-long campaign for me to, alongside others, first to raise awareness of these children in prison. And I had exhausted every mechanism, and including DFAT, including DIAC, including meeting with the Prime Minister, including consular officials, ambassadors, both governments, all of it. I was working closely with Indonesian consular officials and the Indonesian embassy, but for diplomatic reasons, they wanted to work hard behind the scenes. I generated and coordinated a significant awareness-raising campaign, bringing on a cultural shift through lawyers and journalists, and eventually we cornered, and the Australian Human Rights Commission brought them on. And then we cornered the Attorney General, and with the language of our age disputes, we were able to have them released because they didn't want in all this. Heron was government's lie.
Yeah,
and they lied straight to my face, including the prime ministers, including our foreign ministers, including our highest officials. And it disturbed me that they were prepared to have 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old children in our jails. And it also disturbed me that the Australian media lagged behind a story that I gave them on a plate, that I had to work hard for, that I had to pro forma eventually, and it took me 10 months to get the first other journalists onto this in mainstream news. And, you know, a couple of them scrubbed up really well and did their job, but they should have been doing it from the very beginning. And it was the same story with the political parties. It didn't matter who it was. It took me 10 months to finally get the Greens to act. And that actually grossly disturbed me, but, you know, I had to do what I had to do. Look, I finished up on the ABC 730 report, talking about a people's swap deal on May 23, 2012. And right. The thing was that once I'd cornered the government in preparing itself to return about 27 of these Indonesian children back to Indonesia, to their freedom, they tried to secure a deal at that time for either a significant sentence reduction or an early release or a prison transfer of Chappelle Corby. Now, how do I know this? Indonesian government officials told me, consular officials told me, and DFAT officials. And I asked myself, why are they pushing for this, obviously? Obviously, because she's innocent. I put that question to people I know on both sides of the government, and they told me she's innocent. They told me they know she's innocent. But for geopolitical reasons, diplomatic reasons, bullshit national interest reasons, they've never come out publicly and said what they do know without doubt, and they've allowed a cast of aspersions against her. That's what got me involved.
Can I just backtrack just for emphasis? You're saying that you've had direct discussions with DFAT officials who've said they know personally that she is innocent.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Can you name these people, or is that somewhat confidential?
I can't do that. But that's why I actually tried to validate what I've just said by the fact that, and it's on the public record now, it's YouTube, the ABC 730 report, May 23, 2012. I'm one of the subjects on that, and I refer to the deal. Also, ABC 24 ran a news item by me making these claims at the time, and I thought it was, and I did so, and I went public with that because I needed to be on the public record at that time.
Yeah.
I found it immoral, impropriety, and I couldn't believe this of our government. So I knew at some point that if I had not done that at that time, and I had got involved a little bit later, as I knew I would, in arguing the case for Chappelle Corby, and in if I didn't have that record of May 23, 2012 at that time, aspersions would have been cast upon me. So I did that for the sake of truth, and that's why I blew the whistle. And took in reference to that. Now, ask me questions, but because I can go on forever. And
yeah, sure.
There's that much to say.
What I'd like to do is we kind of started this this interview at a bit of a gallop, and what I actually like to do is for you to highlight what you see as being the core issues that stand out in the Chappelle Corby case that prove to you that she's innocent. And I know there's two sides to this. One is the unsubstantiated rumors and smears and hearsay that we've had from the mainstream media, which can be kind of neutralized by pointing out that a lot of these things are not factual. And I'll just give you an example of something that I have looked at. The claim that I think there was one article that was written that said that that surfies in Kuta Beach were buying this marijuana from Australia called Aussie Gold. And that story was based on one particular article that then seemed to do the rounds, and everyone started repeating it. And even years later, you had people saying, oh, yeah, well, they sell Aussie Gold in Bali. It was like a myth had been created in the media. But if you could actually just go through your set of core bullet points that say to you that this woman has been wrongly convicted. We are going to be going to break very shortly. I'll get you to keep going after the break.
Okay. Look, if something's said often enough, it's believed. So that goes to the heart of what you're arguing. And I didn't believe anything what was said, being seasoned as a researcher, first and foremost, and as an investigative journalist. So, in a nutshell, there is no way in the world, and this is why I knew she's innocent, and not just beyond reasonable doubt, there is not a chance in the world anyone smuggles cannabis of that.
Jerry, we're just going to break. We'll be right back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Very important interview. Don't go away. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to my guest, Jerry Georgiatos, about the Schapelle Corby case, and a very important moment in time to be talking about it, as Schapelle is due to be released from prison very soon, the final parole hearing having already taken place, and the media has already indicated that her release is imminent. So, Jerry, you were going through there. I was asked you to give us your core set of points that say to you that this woman was wrongly convicted.
Okay, my core set of points are these. No one smuggles cannabis of a significant quantity to Indonesia. It just doesn't happen. It's never happened. Prior to Schapelle Corby being arrested or post Schapelle Corby being arrested, so it doesn't happen. The Alan Kessing reports of 202, 203, the customs officer who was seconded as an investigator to look into the traffic and security through airport services in Sydney and found corruption to be rife, the fact that those reports were suppressed, the fact that he was alleged a whistleblower when those reports were actually leaked. He's argued that he never released them. The fact that he was prosecuted for the passing of information, it actually showed how sensitive this issue actually is, and that the Australian government and Australian airport services do not want the Australian public to know about the extensiveness of corruption at our airports, and that any one of them could finish up a drug. The Wheeler Report, another independent report that was commissioned by the Howard government just post Schapelle Corby's arrest, and that came back with an indictment of airport services. The fact that last year, on February 13, WikiLeaks, in its release of a number of cables, a cache of cables from Stratfor, the global intelligence organization that everybody knows who is, and I won't go into about. Sure. One of those emails was from Mark, a tactical analyst for Stratfor, and we've got to remember that Stratfor actually is built on its reputation for robust and accurate information. It provides information to organizations like Halliburton, to Homeland Security in the US, the Defense, the Pentagon, the CIA, all that sort of thing. So they've got to get it right around the clock, and they do. Marco Primorac was a tactical analyst in one of his, and he looked into drug trafficking around the world. He made reference to drug trafficking in Australia, referred to Australian airports, rife corruption. He referred to the movement of cannabis around our airports, the movement of and export trafficking of illicit materials via corrupted airport baggage handlers and unsuspecting drug mules such as Schapelle Corby. And he also referred to Schapelle Corby as innocent. Corby as innocent. That email is now online, and it's in any number of my recent articles. I've written 10 articles around that. Let's also remember that on October 8th, Operation Mocha was in place, an anti-drug surveillance of Sydney Airport. It was led by the now disgraced Associate Director of the New South Wales Crimes Commission, anti-drugs fighter, highly decorated, Mark Standen, who's now serving 20 years in prison for drug trafficking. The airport baggage handlers were tipped off that day, and that's why they didn't pick up the retrieve the cannabis that had been planted in her bag at Brisbane, a boogie board bag, and it was intended to be retrieved at Sydney Airport. On that day, they had been expecting a cocaine shipment from South America, and even with that surveillance there, they missed that. They missed that that cocaine shipment. It went through. There's also William Moss, the repented ex-criminal who's actually publicly admitted. We've now got someone, criminal does this? Ex-criminal, who does this? Who actually admitted in 205 that he was the person who had been intended to collect from the corrupted airport baggage handler amidst other illicit drugs for a particular gang or the distributors in Sydney. So I've interviewed William Moss. I've also interviewed Alan Kessing. I've extensively talked to Alan Kessing. His testimony is beyond credible, and it's actually a total indictment of our system. But the big one for me, obviously, is in addition also to the Extendable Project, obviously by those people who I'm also in contact with at length. And I've retraced everything that they've done and double-checked over. But the big one for me is, as I've said, aside the WikiLeaks release, a Stratfor email, aside the Alan Kessing reports, aside what Alan Kessing has also said, aside what William Moss has said, aside the fact that no one traffics cannabis to Indonesia, I was told by officials in the Australian government, I was told by officials in the Indonesian government that she's innocent, that there is not any chance in the world that she's guilty. But to compound all this, I could go on. I can't just nutshell all this stuff.
It is incredible, isn't it? I mean, what you've said there is enough to stun anyone into completely rethinking it. If they previously had made up their mind and hadn't taken on board what you've now said. I mean, the list is endless. I know it just goes on and on and on. We could go on for several hours and still just be scraping the surface.
Absolutely. There's also all the documentation, information, evidence that was never released in the legal defence. The Australian Federal Police not releasing evidence, the Australian government not releasing evidence, testimonies from William Moss not released, secret recordings from William Moss and another member of that particular gang that the cannabis had been originally intended for. This stuff would have proved her innocent without doubt in any Australian jurisdiction. Why would not it some chance in a much more difficult environment, legal environment of an Indonesian court? She had no chance, and she was denied that natural justice by her very own government.
And if I could just add an addendum to all that, there is no provenance or no chain of evidence that connects Chappelle Corby or her family to the drug trade whatsoever. And that may surprise some people, because a lot of people think that there is, again, because of the hearsay, but actually there isn't. And this is very, very clear. I've seen the police records. I know that her father was convicted of a minor offence in the 1970s that was just a possession offence, which has nothing to do with it. So that of course, was kind of hyped up as being some suggestion that her family was involved in drug trafficking, when it was a minor, like a $500 fine, no conviction even recorded. It was about as minor as it can possibly get. Of course, Mercedes Corby was completely exonerated by the Supreme Court after a lengthy trial that really forced Channel 7 to come forward with all the evidence and all the witnesses, and they couldn't convince a jury that Mercedes, Chappelle's sister, was connected to the drug trade either.
Well, this is what I talk about, tenuous associations. These tenuous associations being manifest. And look, I've often argued that the discovery of truth is actually outstripped by the manifest of deceit. But we've actually, got to challenge that premise and do our very best. But the mountain of misinformation that we sometimes have to climb becomes huge. And, what you've experienced and what you've said that's become hearsay, it has become not just hearsay in terms of, we can't actually, we understate, the extent of that hearsay. It's right. All of us have experienced any number of people that, as soon as we raise Chappelle Corby, and this is what I meant when I was shocked by seasoned journalists or politicians or others that I've, discussed this in the last couple of years with, and especially in recent times, they'll tell me ridiculous statements, but I've heard from a friend that, they were deep in the drug trade, and and then there's these horrific classist comments of them. Imagine, how dumb they actually are, or whatever. They've been doing this all their lives.
Yeah.
They describe a criminal nature to them all that actually is a fabrication. And then when I've actually challenged them on their source material and for more information, I've had people tell me that they know a friend of their school friends or a friend of their teacher, Chappelle's teacher, others that are telling me that they know crime gangs on the Gold Coast, and their sources told them about fall into it.
Yeah, there's incredible myths that are circulating. It seems to be just endless. We are just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. We've got one more segment to go. Back here with Truth News Radio. We are talking about Chappelle Corby. We are talking about the entire breadth of the case. We're talking about the bizarre state of the popular mind, the way in which people are sort of brainwashed to the extent that even journalists, whose job it should be to investigate, to think, to look at facts, basically start repeating, start parroting themes that have no basis, that are just talking points that have been injected into the media. Jerry, this one thing I want to do before we end this show, I want to play to you a short clip from the ABC, and this is from the last couple of days, and this goes to the whole issue of the way in which the media tends to spin things, and I just want to get your comment on it. This is the ABC talking about the imminent release of Chappelle and some of the, I guess, outstanding questions and the fact that there are a lot of people who consider her to be innocent. And I'll just get you to respond to what is actually said here. So I'm going to play the clip for you now.
Right, you know, and certainly her defence team had argued that there were a lot of flaws in the prosecution case, a lot of forensic evidence that wasn't collected and the like. It really has been quite a tumultuous legal case, and for many people here in Australia, sometimes a little difficult to follow that Indonesian justice system.
Yes, quite, but you do have to remember that it's been made clear by Chappelle Corby's legal team subsequently that they really did attempt to construct a defence out of things that were being said in Australia at one point about problems with drug trafficking in Australia and the potential that it was a diverted domestic drug operation. They've later made some concessions about that, that we had prisoners coming forward saying they'd overheard conversations in jail that might indicate that. That was discounted by the Indonesian court. I think you'd have to say the level of evidence would have been discounted in an Australian court too. I think what people find most confusing is the bureaucracy that Chappelle Corby's had to face since she was convicted, because this parole attempt is not her first attempt to have her sentence either struck out altogether or reduced in some way. She sought clemency at one point, but that was always going to be difficult with a president who said he would not consider drug matters for clemency. They spent a lot of time looking at the bureaucracy of a prisoner transfer deal, which the Australian government became involved in. That clearly had too many impediments and was going to take a very long time. And if we look, which we might do in a moment, at the case of a Frenchman who's been somewhat ahead of Chappelle Corby in the process, the French government had for many years been attempting a prisoner swap and they didn't succeed at that. Finally, and it's been quite late in the day relatively, because you have to complete two-thirds of your sentence before the parole can be entertained, she approached what is quite a novelty in the Indonesian system, that a foreigner might get parole and stay within Indonesia. But again, we can go to that template of Michel Blanc, the Frenchman. He's a 40-year-old. He's served 14 years. He was arrested in 1999.
All right, I'm going to leave it there. That interview there with the ABC is actually quite long and torturous. And it what I found, Jerry, is that they just very, very briefly touched on the defence case. It was actually that she was actually an unwitting drug mule, but then very, very briefly and almost in passing, he said, "Oh, and that evidence would most certainly have been discounted in an Australian court."
Well, he's very wrong. I'm not sure who that was, but the voice was quite familiar there. But I can identify.
I think it's Tim Palmer. It looks like here it's Tim Palmer. Yeah.
Okay, you're correct. You're correct.
Yeah.
The focus should have always remained on our airport services, and it should have remained on drug trafficking. And it's also a national conversation that needs to happen. Trafficking is actually getting worse. It's continuing and it's getting worse. and there'll be more victims to fall prey. Look, we don't have enough time for me to actually expose, you know, and also add to your listeners the number of stories which are validated, which have been verified of all the drug deals that have gone through, and then and the advice of Australian consular officials to passengers who tourists who have finished up in, for instance, Bali, and have found in their luggage as much cannabis as that Chappelle was actually found to have in hers to be in possession of unwittingly. And their advice was flush it straight away. Don't let the Indonesian authorities know about that. This story that I'm putting out is actually a known fact. Look, that should have been the major focus. And what's been dismissed is the one piece of hard journalism that they could have worked on, and moved to all the speculation, moved to this cheap magazine type, you know, comment, and and it's perceptually modified. And look, what's being done? Chappelle Corby is not just innocent beyond a reasonable doubt. She is innocent. She never committed any crime. She did not smuggle that cannabis out of Australia to Indonesia to make no money and to be sentenced. She's an innocent person. Her family has been victimised, bullied, mobbed, diminished. And what Australia actually owes her is a prime ministerial apology, various restitution, also including to at least allow her, to rebuild her life in terms of the rest of her days. The trauma and the multiple trauma that she's actually had to endure. And the fact they start misusing language like clemency as if to indicate, you know, she's pleading, as if she's remorseful. And the way he actually tried to put out a few signifiers, that's appalling, because Chappelle Corby has always stood by the fact that she's innocent. She has never sought to reduce her sentence or plead for mercy on the premise that she's remorseful. She has said again and again, I can't plead guilty to something I never did. I did no wrong. She is in mental breakdown. She's surviving, according to the family and according to all the researchers that I'm speaking to, by clutching at straws. And the fact that she's, you know, prepared to go for early parole to get out, to abide by the system, is a person in a desperate state of mind, breaking down, who's been, you know, tarnished not just by our Australian government and the legal systems and the Australian media, but whose name has been rubbished and all over the country. And no person should go through that. Most people would not survive that ordeal. And yet she's, all I can say is she's just hanging in there. So any chance that she has and also there was another thing that Kim Palmer said, that Yudhoyono, the president of Indonesia, does not consider the cases and all that sort of stuff. I can tell you, President Yudhoyono knows she's innocent.
Yeah.
The judge is innocent. He did give her a 5-year sentence reduction, and that was because of that people swap deal. That's because of a lot of angst behind the scenes. What the Indonesian government has said to me is that we have a zero-tolerance policy, Jerry. It wasn't targeted at Chappelle Corby. What actually happened to her. We know that she's actually innocent. We know that people don't smuggle cannabis from Australia to our country, but we know we have a policy of zero tolerance to illicit drugs, but cocaine, heroin, and ice, whatever, all the hard drugs that are smuggled into our country are predominantly coming from Australia and also Canada and the United States. We are sending back a powerful message to the Australian government. Do something about airport corruption. Do something about the drug trafficking. We don't want, we don't have the capacity to stop everything coming through. Most of it gets through. But whoever we catch, we have to punish, because who we're really punishing is the Australian government, the US government, the Canadian government. And as long as you don't admit that, and as long as you don't up the ante in doing something about that, much more than what you're actually doing, then we've got no other choice but to send you the most powerful message that we can. And, you know, the judge that she came before, he had sat on 100 similar cases, and never has he found anyone innocent or any form of mitigation, was part of the process.
And, you know, the fact that she was given a sentence reduction, says something to me that that they know she's innocent too, because she's never admitted guilt. So really getting a sentence reduction, normally that's the first thing, is you have to admit guilt. So there is something extraordinary about this case then, isn't there? I mean, obviously the Indonesians know that there is something extraordinary about this case.
Well, the Indonesians know she's innocent, and the Australian government knows that she's innocent. And as I said, I went out on the ABC News in May of 2012, and I actually alluded straight away to the fact of her innocence. But the people feel that was being generated manifest by the... And Bob Carr came out and said, actually, he refuted what I was saying. He said, look, we would be pushing for Schapelle Corby's early release, aside of, these Indonesian children, and would be releasing these Indonesian children aside of Schapelle Corby, because it would be the right thing to do. I can tell you the only reason that they actually tried to pull this off or whatever it was, and to actually try and leverage the Indonesian children with the Indonesian government through diplomatic channels, was because they know that she's innocent, and everybody in the Australian government that's high-ranking enough or in the right sectors, know she's been caught up in a predicament of a skewed sense of the national interest, a skewed sense of geopolitical reasons, and has let down an Australian citizen for this skewed sense, this bent on the national interest, which makes no sense whatsoever, because the truth is anything that sets people free, and the truth has been rubbished from here to eternity by the Australian government, by the Australian media. And let's not forget that, some of the Australian media are heavily funded by the government, or as the Expendable Project has actually also argued, that they're almost organs of the state. Now, I wouldn't go so far to believe that, but Jesus, it's a fair argument to say, because the Australian media actually has a lot to explain about itself, and it never will.
Indeed,
we have
to admit that it's not just one media organisation, it's all of them. And this is something that I'd like to talk with you about in a future show. We are at the end of the hour now. I just want to say thank you so much. I really applaud what you've done. It's so important.
I think it's a lot of us. I can't understate the work of the Expendable researchers. Everything's put together, and I think it's a pretty powerful indictment of this nation that a documentary.
We are at the end of the hour. Sorry, Jerry. That's Truth News Radio Australia for this week. We'll be back next week. See you then, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks.